Change doesn't wait. Sometimes it storms in, sometimes it creeps quietly, unfolding in ways we notice later. It stirs in boardrooms, classrooms, streets, and communities, wherever people act with purpose. What moves you? A vision? A challenge? A belief in business as a force for good? And what holds you back? External factors or limiting beliefs? I'm Gary Watts, and this is Moved, the podcast of 289 people inspiring change. I'll be speaking with people exploring what first moved them, what they've achieved, and the challenges they've had to overcome, both outside and within. Each episode is about human performance, leadership, sustainability, doing the work that matters, and the moments that change everything. This is Moved. How do you wash your clothes? If you said a washing machine, you'd be in the minority, because less than 50% of people in the world actually have a washing machine. And the people that don't, it takes a toll on them physically, but also the opportunity cost of not being able to do other things like education and paid work. Today's guest is an engineer and founder of The Washing Machine Project, Dr. Navjo Soani. His invention, the Divya washing machine, is the world's first flat pack and non-electric manual washing machine. And it's named after Divya, a woman he met that struggled with hand washing clothes for up to 20 hours a week. And now that machine is helping communities that don't have access to electricity or running water and changing many lives. In this conversation, we explore the fascinating story behind the washing machine and hear from Nav and his team who made it happen. And they look set to do so much more. You happy to go?
Yeah, happy to go.
You have some water?
Yes. All right, yeah.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So, Nav, it is fabulous to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, Gary. Thank you so much for the invite.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely welcome. The pleasure is mine. I heard of the Washing Machine Project for the first time. I think it was only a couple of months ago, really. And then I reached out to you and your team, really keen to have a conversation. I've looked at, you know, some of the details on the website, looking at the Instagram, and it's just been fascinating what I've learned there. So it's fabulous to speak to the person that started all of this. And I just wanted to get a sense from you a little bit more around the Washing Machine Project itself. What is the project all about?
Yeah, when you said you looked at the Instagram, I laughed there because it's often me like jumping into rivers and streams, hand washing clothes in the River Thames, Trafalgar Square fountain, that type of thing. So that's why I laughed. It's really funny. We create scroll stopping videos that capture the attention of such a big problem that we're working on. You know, this is a huge issue, and it's a really big underserved issue as well. It's the issue of the 50% of the world that still have to hand wash clothes, and the burden of hand washing clothes is disproportionately placed on women and girls. And we think that's really unfair at the Washing Machine Project. We're changing that through our innovative washing machines. These are the world's first flat packable manual washing machines that save 75% of time and 50% of water compared to hand washing clothes. So typically, a woman would spend up to 20 hours a week for her family hand washing clothes, and she would then save 15 hours off that. So the question is, what would you do with an extra 15 hours per week?
Yeah, an extra 15 hours. It's just fascinating numbers, really. I mean, just the very first number that you shared, and I'd seen this before when I was looking at some of the things you've written, but 50%, you know, I'd have thought that number would have been lower, that the majority would have access, but that is a stunning number when you think about it, that half of the population don't have access to a washing machine.
Yeah, it's something that we take for granted, right? And your parents and my parents, your grandparents and my grandparents benefited from appliance automation over 100 years ago. And it was the engine of liberation. It was the reason why we can sit here and have this conversation, because our parents had the time to go work and, you know, thrive amongst all the busyness of life. And we're trying to do that for the next generation and the next 50% of the world.
Yeah. There are so many areas that we're making massive progress on, but still today, 50% of people don't have access to a washing machine, and then it's by hand. And that takes hours and hours. And it, as you mentioned, the impact largely falls on women and girls at the moment.
Correct. And it's an opportunity killer, you know, like it denies opportunities to work, to study, to rest, to make choices. And, you know, I have met countless women around the world that often have to choose between going to school or doing unpaid labor, going to work or doing unpaid labor, resting or doing unpaid labor. And, you know, women don't have to make these choices anymore in life. And we're trying to change that.
Yeah, because 20 hours is a stunning number, isn't it? Like you say, an opportunity killer. If you're doing 20 hours of something like that a week, it's going to, whether it's education or other types of work you might be doing.
Yeah, it's a huge part of your day. And quite often the women we speak to actually do work. You know, they do have day jobs. They do 12-hour jobs in a farm or working in agriculture or whatever they're working on. But then they still have to come home and do that work, you know. And it seems, as an engineer, it just seems mind-boggling that we're still doing that, you know.
So when did you first become aware of the problem?
Now, I think I've always been a curious child. You know, I was born in London. My father was an aerospace engineer. He would take me to aerospace shows, air shows, and I'd be fascinated as a child of how these big aircrafts would go into the sky. I would be so curious from that. I would come home. I remember very vividly taking a toolbox out of the cupboard and, you know, using the screwdriver to take apart appliances. And I just want to know how it works and what's inside, basically. And I used to break everything around me. And my mum used to get really angry about that. And studying engineering was a natural transition, you know, for me. So I did that in London, and I joined one of the world's best graduate programs at one of the most innovative appliance manufacturers in the world, I'd say. And I was there for 3 years. You know, I was so lucky that I got to do that. But to be honest, Gary, I was just fed up of making vacuum cleaners for rich people. I wanted to make impact, you know. And I knew that as an engineer, you could either help or hinder the planet. And I wanted to help. And that's why I decided to take the leap of faith. I committed the cardinal sin for any Asian family. I decided to quit my job with nothing to pay me in the future. I decided to go volunteer overseas for 1 year to make clean and efficient cook stoves for people who use wood to cook their food. And I did that with Engineers Without Borders for 1 year. And that program, that year-long program, completely transformed my life and changed my life for the better.
Wow.
I remember when I landed in the village in India that I was staying in, there was so much around me that I hadn't seen, you know, no running water. If you didn't have a generator, you had frequent blackouts. There was very primitive ways of communicating. There was limited access to mobility. And people were so happy, you know. And I saw problems all around me as an engineer. You often see these problems. And the village I was staying in was amazing, you know. And my work was brilliant. You know, on Monday, we'd have an idea. Tuesday, the idea would be prototyped. Wednesday, the idea would prototype would be into the field. And then by Thursday we'd realize how rubbish our idea was, you know. And then by Friday we'd already have a new concept for a cook stove, you know. So this kind of iterative learning, living lab, we called it, was brilliant and we loved it. And you know, the time that I spent in the village was the most eye-opening experience for me. I became best friends with my next door neighbor. Her name was Divya.
Divya.
Yeah, her English was amazing. She learned it in high school, but had never used it since. And she wanted to work, but she just didn't have the time. She'd spend hours and hours a day on unpaid labor. It felt like she was just spending every waking hour on something or another, on a chore for the household. And a large majority of that was hand washing her family's clothes. She had two kids and a husband. And when I saw her washing clothes by hand, I said, "Divya, what are you doing? I'll buy you an electric washing machine." And she said, "I don't have a generator. I don't have running water. And your electric washing machine wouldn't be helpful for me because I wouldn't be able to use it when I wanted to." So that was 2017. And I was leaving India at the time to go back to my career here in London. And I said, "You know what, Divya, I will come back here one day and I will bring you a washing machine that you can use." And that was the inception of the washing machine project, that promise to Divya in that village in South India.
That is such a powerful story, Nav. Yeah, so you made that you made that promise to her back then.
Yeah, and yeah, it was a fascinating experience, and I guess I'm stubborn because I've kept to the promise, you know.
Yeah,
and you know, fast forward 7 years, we've now impacted over 50,000 lives and distributed machines. These are called Divya washing machines.
Yeah,
in 15 countries, and we've also distributed a machine to Divya, which I'd love to tell you about.
Yeah, there's so many things I want to get into there in terms of, you know, kind of what followed. But wow, in terms of, you had an amazing graduate engineering job, and you left that because you were searching for something different, and then you kind of went overseas to learn more and discovered a lot of things, and you discovered how, you know, many people actually, life can be harder, a lot of daily manual work. Engineers Without Borders, I've not actually heard of that. Can you tell me a bit more about that first?
Yeah, it's a bit like Doctors Without Borders or Medicine Sans Frontières, as the French organizer. Yeah, it was started, I think, over 20 years ago at Cambridge University as a university chapter. I think there was a bunch of engineers who wanted to come together and make, you know, do good engineering for good, you know, like, you know, you can, as an engineer, you can either help or hinder the planet. And I think these engineers wanted to help. And those university chapters then grew, and then it became an international movement. And I think it's changed over the last 20 years, but inherently it's the ethos is, how can engineers be globally responsible? You know, you can create a missile, or you could create a smokeless cook stove, you know, and each one is important in their way, in their own way, shape, or form, for different reasons. But also, you need to understand the impact of your hard work, you know, the impact of your engineering.
Yeah. And then in your travels, you would have seen so many things that are manual and harder, but the actual washing really stood out from you. You know, you mentioned your neighbor became your best friend, Divya. And of all the kind of issues that you saw, the washing was the one that really, really stuck. And tell me a bit more about how that became for you, like, the real focal point.
I think we have to go back to my own upbringing. As a child, I grew up in a household with only women, right? So my father died when I was a kid.
Okay.
And my mom and my two older sisters, like, raised me single-handedly, you know. And so I knew firsthand what it was like just through looking and observing what my mom and my sisters were up to, you know, observing them and how hard it was for a woman navigating society, especially a brown woman, you know. And when I saw Divya, I think there was, when I saw Divya spending hours and hours a day hand washing clothes, I saw something in Divya that I had seen throughout my life, whether it be through my mom and my sisters or my aunties or other women around me. And I thought, you know, why is this not being looked at? You know, is it too hard? Is it an unmet need? Like, what's going on here? So I dived in a bit further, and I realized that this is such a huge global problem. It's often very low down the priority list for big NGOs, big industry. It's often very hard to get to people like Divya at a cost competitive level. And so all of these things piqued my interest. I think engineering for good as well, and, you know, doing something meaningful and impactful with your work. I was lucky enough. I was in the right place at the right time to meet Divya and come back home and start the washing machine project.
Yeah. So were you flying back from India to the UK?
Correct. Yeah. Was coming back to London, and I tapped up my friend Alex, who was also working for this appliance manufacturer that had left. We met on our first day at that company, and he was equally as frustrated in his job, but he was just still there.
Yeah.
And I said, Alex, I have this idea. I need some help. And he came around to my house, and we started prototyping our first idea, which was a salad spinner.
Wow. Okay. When you made the promise to Divya, did you know you'd be able to deliver on it? Like, I'm just intrigued, like, kind of what went through your mind when you're flying back as well. Like, were you kind of thinking about how you'd approach the problem, or what was going through your mind?
I think when I was flying back from India, it was insane. I struggled so much coming back to London after a year staying in a village in India. It's this kind of reverse culture shock. I was so angry with people. I was like, you don't understand how people are living out there. You're such a consumerist, and you're such a this and that. You know, I remember I used to sit on the floor all the time, eat with my hands, and just to feel some sort of connection. I struggled a lot. And my mum said something really interesting to me at the time. She said, "Now, no one has changed around you. Only you have changed. So if you want others to change around you, you have to inspire them to change. Don't expect them to understand how you're feeling right now." And I kind of made peace with that. And, you know, at the same time, I started the washing machine project. And I knew that this was such a huge global problem, but I didn't have the data to back it up. So I spent all my pocket money, all my spare money, just traveling around the world, speaking to as many people as possible about this problem, understanding needs. And, you know, I remember doing close to like 1,500 family surveys across 5 or 6 countries in the first year, just by myself, like just speaking to people, and just grew momentum in that way, and documented everything, brought more people on the journey through a volunteering capacity. And just built up more and more interest in that way.
Wow. You started a bit of a movement. So you were researching and then doing some prototyping in parallel.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's so important to put the user, the person that's actually consuming your product, at the heart of everything that you do.
Like, yeah.
I think too often people build in labs or in the back rooms with not actually getting out there. And I think people want to search for perfection, but actually there's no perfection in not speaking to your users, you know. You have to have this closed loop.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear about the actual product then, I guess, both the like evolution of it from an engineering perspective and what the product is today.
Well, I mean, it's gone through a massive evolution for sure.
Right.
I mean, Alex and I were around my mom's kitchen table. We had also invited a friend of ours that we met online. His name is Richard Hewitt, and he had invented what is called the spin cycle, which is a bicycle with a washing machine on it. And I felt like, you know, like surely someone's worked on this before. Let's message as many people that have worked on this and let's invite them to my house. So I think I emailed like seven organizations who'd been working or had worked on manual washing machines. And Richard was the only one that replied. He came over with his bike. And it was Richard, Alex, and I. And I remember we were sitting around my mom's kitchen table, and we saw this salad spinner in the corner of the kitchen. And we were like, why are we reinventing the wheel here? Why don't we just use a salad spinner to wash our clothes? So we took the salad spinner off the shelf, took our socks off, and started washing our socks in the salad spinner. And you'll be pleased to know we don't use that salad spinner for food anymore. It's in the office in Bristol where we do all of our R&D as a kind of inspiration. Yeah, and then we quickly moved on. In parallel, I went back to university. You know, as an engineer, I think it's important to understand what you wanted to kind of go into. So for me, I wanted to become a humanitarian engineer. So it was important for me to study humanitarianism. So that's what I did. I went to Bath University, and that was a completely amazing experience. I met so many brilliant people on my course that had already been doing amazing things. So one of my friends on this course was the chief of security at a major NGO in Iraq, a big global NGO that you'd definitely recognize. And he said, why don't you come to Iraq to test out your prototype? And I said, yeah, sure. But we didn't have a prototype. So Alex and I spent the weekend building a prototype. And then on Monday, we would fly out to Iraq with this blue barrel drum packed up from Amazon.
Wow.
And we would tape it up. There'd be a handle at the end of it. And then we would go to Iraq with this, with all of our clothes in this machine. And we tested with 79 families in five refugee camps in Iraq. And what it found was that people wanted a machine. It may have not been this machine, but they wanted an alternative. So we wrote this up into a report, and Oxfam funded our first 50 machines.
Amazing.
On the back of that. So, yeah, fast forward to this year, we've now launched our biggest ever distributions, and we have now created the world's first flat packable manual washing machine. So think of your favorite flat pack furniture.
Yeah.
You put it together with two tools, you turn the drum with a crank handle, you put your clothes in the top through a tub door and a drum door, and then you rotate for about 5 or 6 minutes across half an hour, and your clothes are washed. So it takes away huge amounts of time, water, and effort, and gives you back clean clothes.
Yeah, amazing. So would you say it's... is it ultimately kind of simple in terms of engineering and design, or more complex? What was the challenges?
I mean, if you said to my design team and engineering team that this is a simple engineering challenge, I think they'd probably put in the resignation. It's so hard. I think, you know, innovation is easy, you know, and ideas are easy, and design is easy, but manufacturing is so hard. Like actually creating the thing that you've designed and bringing it to life, not only once, but 1,000 times over, and then 10,000 times over, it's really difficult. And for me, that's where the challenge is now for us. Like, we've been really good at making hundreds of these and now thousands of these, but how do we scale up to, you know, 10,000, 100,000 machines? And that's the next piece of the challenge. That's just the manufacturing side of things. And then it's really important to make sure that it's designed for the person that's using it. So going back every single time and saying, is this the thing that you wanted, you know, and finding out where those pinch points are. And we've learned so much from our users. So many new features on our machine have been based on direct user feedback.
Yeah. Amazing. Why do you think it took so long for like a problem at this scale to be addressed by, you know, an invention like this?
I think it's not commercially viable for big organizations, you know. I think huge appliance manufacturers are tapping into an audience that are going to pay, you know, several hundred dollars or pounds or euros. And that's not the market that, you know, Divya can afford, you know. Her affordability is, you know, in the $70 mark, you know, or £70 mark. And how do you create a machine for her? That's difficult. And I think that's part of it. Supply chain is really tough, you know, getting it to the end user. But I think the world is shifting and the top 5-10% is being saturated and the middle class is growing. And I'm really excited. There's a lot of innovation happening in this space, in this bottom of the pyramid, so to speak.
Yeah. Because it's a net benefit, really, isn't it? If you're kind of freeing, like you called it at the beginning, I think an opportunity killer. And if you're kind of freeing up that amount of time for people to maybe access more education or more economic productivity, it's just a game changer. I love that you call the machine Divya. And I know that you made that promise to Divya in 2017, and then you came back and so much went in terms of your travels and the research and all the families you said you met. And the prototyping, and it's complex, the design, the engineering, and so on. But what was the next time that you actually met Divya? Was it in between, like where you're kind of still working on something? Or I guess at some point you delivered a machine. I'm really intrigued the next time you met.
Yeah, I mean, from 2017 to probably 2019, I was probably like tinkering away. And I had gone back to Divya's village in 2019, and the washing machine project had recently been featured in like a large news outlet around the world, and we had this big spread, like double page spread in a massive national Indian newspaper, one of the biggest, and it was Divya's face and my face side by side. And I went to go give this article to her, and she was really embarrassed, but also very proud of what she'd inspired. And that was the kind of first port of call. And, you know, she was pleasantly surprised at what she had inspired.
Amazing. Yeah. So she gained time. She got like maybe approximately 15 hours of the 20 she was spending, you know, roughly. How was she able to use that time gain?
Well, Divya actually now helps us at the washing machine project with finding more people in the village that need the machine. And she had said something really special. So in 2024, we went back to the village to give Divya a Divya machine. And I took some of my colleagues, took some of our partners at Whirlpool Foundation. And she said, you know, Nav, you've helped us and you've helped this village. Now go find the billions of women that need this because they need your support now. Mm. And we were crying, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're going to find those next people that we can support.
Yeah, I'm moved just hearing it, really. That was just last year when you actually delivered.
Podcast is called Moved, right?
but truly, like, it's poignant just thinking about that I'm just picturing when you were meeting for the first time and seeing, and then, and that's 7 years, isn't it? If it was last year.
Yeah, 7 year promise.
With a, yeah, wow, that would must have been so such an experience. Tell me a little bit about the distribution of the product then. Like, how challenging is that to get it out to these places, and how widespread is it at the moment?
Yeah, so we are in about 15 countries, some more than others. Some we only have a handful of machines, and some we have several hundred machines. The way that we operate is we operate through a cohort and an ecosystem of partners on the ground, some really big, like the UNHCR and UNICEF and Oxfam, and some really small, so grassroots organizations that really want to help their community. And one thing that's really important is that we work with people that have the trust of the community, they understand the language, and they have access. And we work with these people side by side, hand in hand, to support them to distribute our machines. Mm. They do what is called a needs-based assessment, which is, you know, trying to understand whether there's an actual need here. So we have this hypothesis that there is a need, but is that actually the case? And then we do pilots, and then we do midlines and endlines surveys that assess the impact of the machine. So yes, okay, fine. It saves time, it saves water, and it saves effort. But so what? How has this changed the society that they're living in? And all of our reports are now on our website. So please have a browse at thewashingmachineproject.org.
Yeah, I'll share links to that as well. So what is your vision?
I mean, the short-term vision is we want to get to 1 million people by 2030. So that's only four short years away. Mm-hmm. But we have a much bigger vision, which is that we want to become a leading innovative R&D organization that puts people like Divya at the heart of everything that we do. So whether it's development or humanitarian challenges, whether it's washing machines or something else, we want to create solutions for people like Divya.
Wonderful. Yeah. Do you have other products at the moment or in the pipeline or in your mind?
Yeah, we do. We do. I mean, we're really excited here. I have a team of 8 engineers that work in Bristol around the clock, innovating. And I think, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll be laughing at the time we only made washing machines.
Yeah. But yeah, that is such a profound product that you made. And
we'll probably need to go through a rebrand for sure. We didn't think that far ahead. So
I don't know. The name really stands out to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying we should keep it the same? That's interesting. I like that.
I love it. Yeah. Like, you know, yes, there are many, many other challenges that people have. There's lots of other, you know, manual labor, particularly some of the things that you've mentioned that fall on women and young girls. But, you know, Divya was the very first inspiration for this. You created something which is now changing the lives of many people. Yeah, that's, hopefully there's many other things that you kind of go on to do, but that is right at the heart of, yeah, the origin story, I guess, of what you've been doing.
So, yeah, I think so. And there's a lot to do. And my team are really excited to just grow in this laundry landscape. You know, the opportunities are endless, whether it's laundrettes or semi-automatic or solar-powered machines. You know, there's so much we could do just in laundry.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Who came up with the name The Washing Machine Project?
Oh, me. It was even the logo, it was like, we didn't think too far ahead. You know, it was, I wanted it to be really clear and super, super easy to understand. And the logo itself, it was £5, took 2 days to make on Fiverr. And I wanted it to signify Divya at the center of everything that we do. So it's got a heart in the middle
Love it.
Of the logo.
So we started with the, you started with the 50% stat that, you know, a huge proportion, many of us take it for granted, but actually a huge proportion don't have access to a washing machine and it's manual. Is that percentage changing? Do you see that percentage changing? What is stopping that? If not, when there are potential solutions?
Yeah, it is. It is changing significantly. I mean, when we started, there was a stat lying around that said 70% of the world hand wash clothes. So, so that's coming down significantly. And we understand that this is not an issue that we can solve on our own. And there are some brilliant organizations that are also trying to tackle this problem in their way, in their own way, in their own countries. And what I think is important is bringing everyone together. So we, earlier this year, we put together the Global Laundry Alliance, which is tackling this issue together. And yeah, there's other big institutions like the Asian Development Bank that have just released their own laundry landscape report for the first time ever. And I'm going to speak with them at a conference next week in Bangkok at the Water Congress. So it's been a lonely road for the last 5 or 6 years. And it's nice that there's so many other organizations talking about this now.
Yeah, inspiring. So what does your mother think now? Because I know you mentioned back in, you know, a few years ago now, you had a great graduate engineering job and it didn't necessarily go that well when you said that you were quitting that as such. What do they think now?
I mean, my mum, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, when I quit my graduate job, she was in tears. You know, she's like, Nav, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. Why are you doing this? And now she's the biggest fan, you know, like she sees every social media post. She shows everyone all the articles. Once I saw her showing a news article to the mechanic that she'd gone to service her car with. She's randomly showing the article of the washing machine project to the mechanic. And I was like, what's going on? You know, but yeah, she's a big fan and I'm glad that the washing machine project worked out. Otherwise I'd be pretty screwed.
Yeah, I'm glad it worked out too. I'm sure she's so proud. I mean, I'd love to ask a bit more about your background, like, you know, growing up, you mentioned it was an all female family raising you, your two sisters, your mother, and your dad dying when you were younger. But I believe your family was initially in unpartitioned India, and I'd love to hear a bit more about that, actually.
Yeah, so I'm Punjabi Sikh. Lots of Punjabis have a story of partition.
Mm-hmm.
The state was split in half.
Mm.
And it was a tragic time for both sides of my family. My mum was a bit younger than my father, but my mum's parents had to go through this partition where they moved over from Rawalpindi to Mumbai. And my father himself and his siblings had to move with gunshots flying over their head.
Wow.
Is what his brother has told me, my uncle. And just leave everything behind. But they always thought that they would go back. It was never a goodbye. It was a see you later.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, my uncle is now in his late 80s, early 90s, and he's never been back, you know, and mm-hmm. he left when he was 13 or 14. So it's sad that they had to go through, and I think it followed my father throughout his whole life. You know, I don't think he ever really recovered from those kind of feelings and thoughts. And yeah, I mean, he traveled to the UK to study engineering. My mum followed him. I mean, she didn't want to come to the UK. She had an amazing job, you know, but and an arranged marriage led her here to the UK, and you know, she had an amazing career in India. And then her first job was at a builder's merchant as a secretary, and it was a huge, I mean, there's no criticism of anyone doing any sort of job, but she was really overqualified for this job.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she retired a couple of years ago after a 40-year career in HMRC in for the government. And,
yeah, 40 years.
She's it was really, really, really interesting because at the same time, it was the King's coronation, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I was awarded the Points of Light Award, and the Prime Minister at the time invited us for a lunch during the King's coronation on Downing Street. So I thought, why not bring my mum, who's given up so much of her life for the government, and celebrate with her. So I got my mum to have lunch with the Prime Minister during the King's coronation as a retirement present. So that was nice. I mean, she came to the UK with £5 in her pocket. And you know, she invested in her family, her career, and her financially. And, you know, she's amazing now, you know, so good for her.
Yeah, I can tell. She came to the UK with £5 in her pocket. Then she spent 40 years working in the civil service. And then she was initially perturbed by her son quitting his job. But there you are at number 10 with the Prime Minister having lunch. That's a lovely, lovely story. And with the award you actually mentioned?
It's called the Points of Light Award. It's given to an individual doing community work in one way, shape or form every day, every working day of the week by the Prime Minister of the time. And I think, you know, my mum's story is a really good example of how, you know, in this day and age, we look at people coming into this country in a certain way. And I think there's so many success stories there that we should lean on in times like this.
Yeah, definitely. And then actually going back to the kind of, with the changes that happened in India, because, yeah, sometimes people change country from choice, but sometimes it's less from choice and it's more there's in that case, a seismic activity. I've seen all sorts of things on it in the past, documentaries and films, and it heartbreaking, really. And like you say, your uncle never actually went back and, you know, in a way wanted to. But and that's had a bit of an imprint on your life growing up then, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask any Punjabi, they have a story of displacement in their family, and it's infected them in one way, shape or form, whether it's generational trauma or directly. And, you know, that's why I have great, great, great empathy for refugees or displaced people. You know, displacement's going up. We need to support these people as much as possible because it's not our choice. You know, they're being forcibly displaced for one reason or another.
And engineering, did you say your father was originally an engineer? So that kind of
he was
the family.
It did. But I mean, he died when I was 8. So, I mean, there was not much knowledge transfer there, but.
No.
Yeah, seems like it was in the blood.
It seems like it was in the blood. Yeah. Wow. What was the first things you were? Tell me a bit more about you becoming an engineer.
Yeah, I mean, I was a very curious child. You know, I wanted to just know how things work. You know, and I was just obsessed with taking apart things, you know, appliances, and I remember taking apart the TV and I broke it. Remotes, plugs, never knew I had to put them back together again. Just curious. I was also good with numbers. I just loved numbers, you know. I remember my mom asked me to get some bread from the shop, gave me £1, and I bought milk instead because I wanted to buy chocolate, you know. I just was obsessed with, you know, numbers and making things work.
Yeah. Wow. So engineering, numbers, making things work, and then a really strong drive to help other people.
Yeah, that's the I think that's going to be the name of the book, I think.
Oh, you were going to write a book?
No, I'm joking. Never, yeah. Well, never say never, but yeah, definitely the story's unfinished.
Yeah. Amazing. Any advice you have to, I guess, you know, many listeners, you know, in the world of work, and probably most people would be driven to wanting to, you know, there's a number of things you might want from work, but one of the things often is wanting to have an impact, wanting to have a positive impact. It's not always easy. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to do a job and, you know, make money and so on. But is there any advice you would have for people that aren't necessarily feeling that alignment in the work that they do with values or the impact they want to make?
I see it all the time, Gary. I see it all the time. I mean, COVID taught us that we're all mortal, right? Like it showed that, you know, that life is finite. And, you know, we see it so much now, people ending their careers 10, 15, 20 years early, going to pursue the thing that they always wanted to do in their lives. I'm lucky that I wanted to, and I realized that I wanted to pursue this purpose very early into my career, you know, 3 or 4 years into my career. But people don't get that until later on in life. And people may never get that because of society or other commitments that they have. So I'm lucky that I've been in this place. I think people are crying out for purpose, especially in this day and age. They want to help. They just don't know how. And you don't need to fly across the world to help people. You know, there's so much pain and suffering happening right now in the places that we live. You just have to walk half a mile down the road to see someone living on the streets homeless. You know, what I say to people is, you know, fall in love with the problem, because the solution will always change. You know, these solutions are going to move on, but the problem is the thing that's going to keep you going. And find your problem, find your passion, link it to purpose, and you'll make some really positive impact in the world, and it won't even feel like a job.
Yeah, I love that. I'm never going to look at washing machines in the same way again, I don't think. It's just always something I've really, you know, largely taken for granted. You know,
yeah, I'm sure.
Sort of thought it, sure. Maybe in the past that people, you know, largely, you know, you think, I know my grandma and her mother and so on would have washed by hand. But I sort of saw it as something largely in the past, and then it really shone a light for me that it really isn't in the past, it's now. And the impact for that is great. The opportunity killer that you mentioned. Actually, my washing machine was on, because I'm recording this at home. It was on this morning just before we started the call. It was about 18 minutes left on the cycle, and just kind of occurred to me, I just take it so for granted. We put the thing in, turn it on, 2 hours, and then off again, and so on. But actually, many people don't have that simplicity. And the 20 hours number that you mentioned is huge, really. And I'm not going to look at it in the same way. If somebody wanted to see one of the machines that you currently have, I mean, for many listeners might be in the UK or elsewhere, how would they see one in action?
We're actually in discussions with a major museum in London to get it put into a museum. That's really funny. But nice. That's not going to happen. That's not going to be happening for a while. I mean... Online is perfect place to go, thewashingmachineproject.org. Yeah. Or if you have any of the social media channels, just look at the pinned video and it will give you a deep dive into the Divya washing machine.
Yeah, I'd really recommend. I've really enjoyed some of those short form videos actually you've been putting on there. They're really good. You do it really well.
The team are amazing. You know, I have a team of 15 plus people now, and they're incredible. They work so hard day in, day out, you know, and they believe in the mission, the vision, and where we're going. And we're really happy. We're really lucky that we have amazing partners as well. Wellful Foundation, Domestic in General, Tony's Chocolate Lonely, RS, Jaguar Land Rover. These are incredible partners that make our work possible.
Yeah, amazing. Well, it sounds like you've established a fabulous team. And you listed some really amazing partners there as well that are helping you. It's wonderful the work you're doing. I was inspired by it when I first heard about it, and it's been an absolute joy to chat with you now, and I've really appreciated you bringing it to life. And I'll obviously share all the links out, because I think this is a really interesting story, and I love that, you know, there's, you've got that kind of coming back round, completing the circle moment with Divya as well. So it's been
thanks,
wonderful.
Gary. Appreciate it, and well done on the podcast. I'd love to come back in a couple of years and report on all the progress.
I would love that too. Yeah. And actually, you know, thinking about like your mother, Divya, and your team, but you in particular, because, you know, it was a powerful thing that you did, and it was a bold move and a risk. But it kind of came full circle back to the, yeah, I think of that lunch at number 10 with your mother. That, yeah, for me, that's,
yeah, that's funny.
Wonderful. Yeah, we'll definitely
Thanks.
Speak again. Thank you so much.
Yeah, take care. Good luck.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of Moved. If it sparks something for you, subscribe and share it with someone who's looking to make a difference. I'm Gary Watts, and I'll see you next time as we explore what moves people and ideas forward.